For great-looking t-shirts, hoodies, and sweatshirts, the TNT Shop is now open at tntradio.live. You're listening to Germ Warfare with Jeremy Nell on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
I have my coffee. It is cold and wet. It is raining cats and dogs here in Cape Town at the bottom tip of the African continent. Winter has officially arrived. Man, I tell you, I can't figure out whether or not I like winter. I mean, I think I enjoy it when it's here. And then after a while, I get sick of it. And then I'm like, okay, I'm ready for summer. And then summer hits and I'm enjoying it. And then during the middle of it, I'm like, okay, all right, it's too hot. Bring back winter. But at the moment, I'm enjoying it. It's very pleasant, I must tell you. I do enjoy the rain. Everything here becomes very green, very pretty. To fly in over Cape Town during winter is very beautiful, very scenic. If you actually have been to Cape Town, send me an email, germwarfare@tntradio.live. Let me know. We are very far away from absolutely anything and everything. Although, mind you, I think Alex is pretty far away from everything as well, being in Australia. I'm trying to figure out who's further away on average, whether he in Australia is further away from most of the world or if I am. I think I might be, because Africa, I mean, there's nowhere I can go. Like, I'm right at the very bottom tip of the continent. So I can only go, I suppose, upwards. If I go, let's say, to the left, I end up going towards South America. That's pretty far away. Mind you, where Alex is in Australia, he can only really, I suppose, go to New Zealand or upwards, I guess, towards Japan. I should actually have a look at this. It's quite interesting. I know that there's a joke about everybody in New Zealand being far away from everything. But I don't really know how this works. I know that if I fly to Sydney, which I've done, it was about 12 hours and I had to fly from Johannesburg direct. As somebody said a few days ago on Twitter that because Earth is flat, every flight from South Africa stops somewhere in the Middle East before going to Australia, which of course is nonsense because I flew direct from Johannesburg to Sydney and it went right over the ocean. We stopped nowhere. Jump into the live chat. It's open in front of me. It's on TNT's website. And I think, Alex, that's my housekeeping. Shall we get to Catherine Austin Fitz? My name is Germ. This is Germ Warfare, the battle of ideas.
Focused on the facts.
It's never biased.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT. It's a quote from Catherine Austin Fitz. Who's your banker? Who's your farmer? Who's your sheriff? Where's your money? Catherine Austin Fitz, how long has it been since we last chatted? Welcome.
Oh, too long. I'm sorry. I've been difficult. We were getting out our latest wrap-up. I have to show it to you. It's called Building Wealth. And did you get your copy yet, Jeremy?
Yes. Well, I received the previous edition.
Okay. So I just wanted to tell you, I was resoundingly criticized by somebody for promoting wealth and therefore promoting greed. So on the back of this wrap-up, I have my new favorite quote, and I just want to read it to you. You ready? Yes. You can build wealth, you can build poverty, or you can build nothing. Which do you prefer?
Oh, that's a tough one. Let me think about that.
Well, I would say the people that we're trying to bring transparency to and stop are building quite a lot of poverty. So my response to them is... We're wealth builders. We prefer wealth.
Why would somebody equate wealth with greed?
I think just because you're confused. If you've grown up in a financial system where the corruption is getting worse and worse, and you see more people making money by basically engaging in corrupt or criminal activities, you know, you lose hold of the model that says, you know, we build wealth by doing things that add value to others in a way that makes the pie bigger and it's all good. In other words, when wealth comes from activities that truly advantage, you know, living beings and other humans, then wealth is a terrific thing. You know, it's more for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, and I live in Africa, so I see the absolute devastation of what happens when you don't have wealth. And I find it so terrible when people say that wealth equals greed. I mean, you know, Klaus Schwab says you'll own nothing and you'll be happy. Catherine, you need to see what's around me here on the African continent. There are a lot of people who own nothing and they are definitely not happy.
Right. Well, owning nothing and being under total control, including mind control, means slavery.
Mm.
You know, and we're talking about a new invasive form of slavery. So, you know, it's part of the thing, and you see this so much from what's happening in South Africa, you know, it takes a certain amount of cooperation, you know, company by company, enterprise by enterprise, you know, government by government, to make wealth building go. You need a basic infrastructure, you need basic transportation, you need basic energy, and you need to do those things productively. If you go back in history and see the societies where people really suffered in poverty, it was because capital was misallocated and spent on the wrong things in the wrong way, or consolidated under central control in a way that shrunk the pie for everybody. And that's what's happening now. We are watching the pie shrinking because of the, you know, too many people are making money on war or organized crime or corrupt. And then the fundamental infrastructure that we all depend on, whether it's energy infrastructure, you know, roads, bridges, these things break down. I mean, try and run a good car over roads that are full of potholes, you know, your maintenance bill skyrockets. So we're watching an implosion of basic systems. In the United States, we've seen, you know, terrible municipality harm done by the water systems not being managed properly and people dying and being poisoned, literally. So, you know, civilization can be very wealth building, but it requires hard work and it requires an absence of corruption. And we're all struggling wherever we are, north and south, east and west, with the extraordinary expense of tyranny and corruption.
You were talking about slavery, and something that people take for granted is energy. Now, as you know, here in South Africa, we have 6 to 10 hours per day of no electricity. That is immense slavery, because you cannot understand how reliant or dependent you are on it until you don't have it.
Right. And my understanding, Jeremy, is you've been dealing with rolling blackouts, so you can, you know, you can work for a short period of time and then you lose it. And then you work for a short period of time and then you lose it. And it's very, you know, it's very, even the hours you get can be unproductive because it's, you can't rely on it.
But there is also a silver lining. Whenever you have this sort of chaos, and this obviously I'm talking about all sorts of chaos now, like you were referring in the United States and of course in Europe, the silver lining is that you have two choices. You either do something or you sink. So it does allow for creativity and innovation, at least within the private sector.
You do get creativity and innovation, but and it can become very powerful when that creativity and innovation comes together and work. If you look at what happened in Northern Europe after Charlemagne, when the empire fell apart, you literally saw networks of merchants get together and link up and create essentially the Hanseatic League that went all the way from Scandinavia across Northern Europe to England, because they just said, okay, you know, adults have to step up and run this. And so the merchants took over and literally got to the point where they were fielding their own, you know, federations and armies and everything else. So we're all going to have to step up and lead and organize. One of the reasons I wrote Building Wealth, and I'd love to talk with you a little bit about it and what it says, but one of the reasons I wrote it was to make sure that we understood if we were going to build a human civilization, it had to be wealth building. It had to be productive. It had to allocate capital well. Mm. whether it was our time or our money or our other resources, we all had to be in the business because first and foremost, when you look at a global financial system, the most important question to me is who enforces? You know, what are the rules and then who enforces the rules? And if you can create a culture that is self-enforcing to the greatest extent possible, that is the most productive situation you can have. I mean, if you want to have a great currency, if you want to have a great equity market, what you need is bottom-up self-enforcement to the max. And that means we all need to get into the business of being wealth builders and reject the philosophy of the centralizers who want to centralize control, you know, and literally wipe out most wealth.
Well, you've created my segue because I want you to first, if you don't mind, just contextualize what you're talking about within within the sphere of the financial coup d'etat that you often speak about and the missing money, for example. Like that is immense, immense amounts of corruption, slavery, everything that is wrong.
Well, it's a coup. It's more than just corruption. It's a coup. So in the United States since the mid-90s, we've seen two things, and it's good to bring the financial system down to a simple model. So if you look at the United States, if the Treasury wanted to pay its bills, it could just issue its own currency, right? But it doesn't. It issues debt. We don't need to use debt to create our currency. We can just issue money, right? So the first thing is the government is already in a debt trap by playing this game of we need to issue debt to create money, which is not the case. Anyway, but the government now has $31 trillion of debt in the United States. And as you know, we're in a huge food fight about trying to get Congress to increase the debt limit, because if they don't increase the debt limit in a short order of time, you know, we're going to run into a situation where the government runs out of cash because they can't continue to issue the debt. But number one is, you know, we're issuing debt when we don't need to, which basically gives the bankers tremendous power and control over us, which is completely unnecessary. But that's number one. But number two, since the late 90s, between 1998 and 2015, $21 trillion has gone missing from U.S. accounts. We have $21 trillion of undocumentable adjustments, which means the government is so far outside of the financial management laws, you know, might as well be on Pluto. So there is a you know, so basically you're creating $21 trillion of debt that you don't have to, and then the money's disappearing out of the back door. And of course, that's not sustainable, which is one of the reasons I suspect Congress is having a big old fight about the debt limit, because, you know, when you have that much money disappearing out the back door, everybody's fighting over the related pork, right? And where it goes and has to keep that secret. So I would say the U.S. finances are literally represent a financial coup d'etat. Now, I was told by a top pension fund leader in 1997, he said, quote, they've given up on the country. They're moving all the money out starting in the fall. And it's a little bit like, you know, you hear the stories of a man who has a family and then he starts another family in another town and he's trying to carry both families out of one paycheck. And things become more and more bizarre and more strange. And finally, can't stand the tension. So he just walks out on the first family and goes and lives with the second family. And the first family is left high and dry without a source of income. And I think, you know, grossly oversimplified, that's what we're looking at in the United States. And then the question is, you know, to what extent is that happening in the other G7 or G20 nations? We see a huge increase in people moving into the retirement age. And a lot of this means net that the pension funds haven't been properly funded to handle the retirements. And so the question for all the leaders is, how do they, you know, what's your formula? Do you move out the retirement age as they're doing in Russia or France, or do you cancel retirement obligations, just abrogate them, or do you depopulate or lower life expectancy? And I suspect that's part of what certainly we're watching in the United States.
Yeah, the poisoning, the great poisoning, as you've mentioned before.
The great poisoning, right. I started to notice the great poisoning after the cratering of the, or after the coup started. And I was very concerned about the, you know, I made a great effort between 1998 and 2004 to warn people. And part of what happened was many of the buildings carrying the records related to the financial coup happened to get blown up during 9/11. So there was a lot of interaction. Yeah, just James Corbett has a great video called 9/11 Trillions, where he goes through a lot of the issues, including the missing money. And I should just say, on all the money that's disappeared from the federal government, we have a great website at missingmoney.solaria.com, and there's a wealth of documentation from both the government and our work and research over the years, because we've been covering this story for more than 25 years. So and we just published a new interview today. It's up at solaria.com with Dr. Mark Skidmore. It's called Financial Coup d'Etat, Missing Money for Beginners. And we thought, you know, it'd be helpful now to do a whole refresh and go from the beginning, because many people are new to this. And for many years, Jeremy, no one could believe that there was literally a coup d'etat happening and they didn't notice. You know, that's kind of shocking. And of course, they didn't notice because we were just running up the debt and financing the two families out of one paycheck, so to speak.
How much of this was amplified, though, in 2008? I know in your one article, you were talking about the subprime mortgage crisis.
So it was really interesting because I suspected coming into the financial crisis that they were going to, you know, they were able to persuade the Congress to go along with writing what turned out to be $27 trillion of checks to fund the financial crisis. And to put this in perspective, at the time I was told that $8 trillion would pay off all single family mortgages in the United States. $7 trillion would pay them off. So the amount of the bailouts were essentially 400% of what it would take to pay off all the mortgages in the country, which was very supportive of my argument that there were many more mortgages outstanding than there were houses in the United States. Anyway, but you saw with the bailouts and the financial, so to speak, crisis, and the literally bullying of Congress to go along with giving away, it's like giving away 100% of the capital of the United States. You were able to see how mature the coup had become. It was a real exercise in a criminal syndicate basically shaking down a country. It was extraordinary. And the fact that so many people went along with it and couldn't fathom what was happening. You know, it was almost as though you realized that we'd flunked, you know, we had failed as a nation teaching math, you know, in high school.
One of the solutions that you've given those to break up the big banks, how do you even go about doing that?
Well, so, you know, the first thing you all have to do is you have to face, you know, I used to have a pastor say, if we can face it, God can fix it. The first thing you have to do is you have to face what is going on and face the fact that it's something that has to be dealt with. And then what you need to say is, okay, I'm going to deal with this. What can I do as an individual? What can I do as a family or a small group of people, my friends, my community? And then what can my state and local government officials do, you know, and scale up? What can investors do? So there are many different points of view, from a business to an investor to a politician or an individual. But the first thing you could do is get yourself much more resilient. In other words, we're saying that the financial system and the governmental systems and its different jurisdiction to jurisdiction are becoming less reliable. So the first thing you can do is stop being dependent on that system, stop working for it, stop helping it. If you can stop financing it, don't invest in it, but turn around and start to build your resiliency and freedom from that system. So, you know, one of my favorite things is use cash. Yes. If you come to Solaria, we have great hats called Make Cash Great Again. And what we try and encourage people is control comes through digital systems. Now, to have a successful communication system or financial system. We need digital systems. I love digital systems. You know, we all depend on, we're talking now through a digital system, but we need a healthy balance of analog systems and digital systems. So the first thing I tell people do is dial back, you know, rebuild the analog system in your life and dial back your dependency on the digital system. So that's first. We have a wonderful article that Corey Lynn wrote for us called Loosen Technology's Grip on Your Mind about sort of how to get that in perspective. Okay, use cash is absolutely one, and build resiliency, food, shelter, energy, all the things you know. If you look at all the things that can interrupt what I call financial transaction freedom, you know, many of them have to do with power and energy supply and being able to go, you know, have enough food, have enough, you know, whatever you need for your home and shelter, have enough cash so that you can make it through different kinds of interruptions or problems. We just saw the governor of the New Zealand Central Bank stand up after the cyclones and say, thank God we had cash. And I was amazed. I said, I turned to one of my colleagues and I said, apparently he did not get the memo. It's one of the best advertisements for cash I've seen. Okay, so you can build resiliency, you can build the ability to cash. The next thing I have to tell you is so important, and it's, you know, massive attention to this is going to make an enormous difference, Jeremy. And that is, appreciate that we are dealing with digital systems and telecommunications and media that uses entrainment technology, subliminal programming, and forms of neurological grade weaponry. You know, we are trying to communicate with each other through all these different methods, whether it's phone, whether it's internet, all these different methods that are, you know, overlaid or manipulated using military grade weaponry to trick us into thinking something other than we would normally. You know, or to fight with each other, or to get even the, you know, these can make you sick. And so I have a wonderful collection. It's Larry. It's called Mind Control Tactics Used on Young People and Everyone Else Too. And it's the best collection of links we've found on this topic, including a series of lectures at West Point to the military about how this weaponry works. And I can't tell you how important I think this is. So for example, during the pandemic, I have a wonderful, wonderful doctor who says the three greatest killers of people during the COVID-19 pandemic was number one, fear, number two, fear, and number three, fear. and fear was the weapon. And I think one of the reasons they were able to put so many people into fear was using mind control. And if you don't know that technology exists, you know, you fall into the trap. I have a great, if you go to that mind control collection, one of the first links is an interview I did in 2010. I was from 2007 to 2018, I worked as an investment advisor. And one of the ways that I saw people defrauded was using entrainment technology and subliminal programming to market them either private placement investments or precious metals or different things that would be marketed by phone. They were using entrainment technology to trick people. And so I went to one of the scientists who knows about it. And I said, please come on the Soleri report. And because they can't protect themselves until they can fathom that it exists. And I'm not a scientist. I'm not a technologist. I don't understand how the technology works. Come on and explain. So he came on and I talked about a conference where they were using it, and I knew they were using it, Jeremy, and it still tricked me. Now I caught myself. I explained it all in the interview. It's public if you want to hear it. So I would strongly recommend, if you're responsible for yourself, your family, educate yourself about this technology and how you can, because if we don't have good maps of reality, we're going to get tricked. We're going to get led into the slaughter. And, you know, I always say control and freedom happen one person at a time. You're responsible to make sure you're free. And you need, the first thing you need is you need a clear, coherent mind, and you need a healthy body. And you know, under the kind of stress that some of us live with, you know, how hard that is to do. But it starts with a clear mind, because keeping yourself healthy in the great poisoning requires dealing with a lot of complex information about how to do that, you know, because among other things, you have to become your own doctor.
Yes.
Whoever thought, you know, I never thought when my dream in life, because I'm an investment banker and I loved being an investment banker, Jeremy. It was great. I loved it. And, you know, I love building wealth. And that was, you know, my gift and my way of doing it. But the reality was when I had to leave the establishment, I started to discover, wait a minute, I have to be my own systems administrator. Wait a minute, I have to be my own doctor. Wait a minute, I have to be my own plumber. You know, I just kept learning more and more. And for somebody who was used to just being a real expert and then making a lot of money and paying everybody else to do everything, this idea of going and learning all these different things, I mean, the complexity was overwhelming. So you need a clear, coherent mind if you're going to deal with it. So I can't deal with microbiology without a clear mind.
It's wonderful hearing you say that. Just before we went live, I promoted the show and I said that, you know, you're one of the people who've had a massive influence on me over the last few years for all the right reasons. And the truth is that what you just said now resonates so profoundly with me, because in 2020, I was, for example, taking antidepressants and other prescription drugs. I take nothing now. I've been off everything pharmaceutical for years now. I got into the gym, changed my diet, go away more often into nature with my wife, try and go into the sunshine, focus more on friends and family. All of those things that you just said. We also using cash. And there is this sense, there's a sense of freedom that you get that's, it's not really easy to put into words, but it feels like you've been liberated.
I call it coming clean. You know, you basically withdraw from that which is not healthy, and you shift your investment of time and money into that which is healthy. A lot of it is removing from your life people who don't have integrity and trying to focus your work, your life on things that do have integrity. And there is an enormous drain, both energetically and financially, that comes with dealing with the corrupt aspects of society. And the more you limit your time, your attention to those things that have integrity, you know, there's a multiplier that happens. Some of it's energetic, some of it's financial, you know, but it's real. And, you know, when we start out, my favorite thing in the introduction to building wealth is a wonderful Sanskrit prayer that one of my subscribers pointed out to me. So it's we have it right next to the lighthouse. I'll just show you. It's really, I don't know if you can see it. Glare is coming.
Only I can see it, or the audience can't, listeners can't see it.
It starts off, it says, Lord, lead us from the unreal to the real. And the process that you've been going through is you're leaving behind the unreal and trying to find your way to what is to you real. And, you know, when you're standing on real ground with real people, it always feels great. I was at a dinner with in Knoxville, and I was sitting with Bobby Kennedy at his table. We were about to give a presentation at the Weston Price Conference. And Paul Merrick from Australia came and sat down, the doctor. And I said, you know, how has this journey been? And he said, well, you know, I lost my practice, I lost my status, and I've lost my family. And he looked really sad. And then he got a big smile on his face and he says, now I hang out with all these fabulous new friends I have all over the globe. And you know something? It's pretty wonderful.
Silver lining.
Yeah. But you have to leave where you were. Mm. You know, you're not in the right place. And you have to go to where you're supposed to be, where you serve your purpose. And, you know, and what you discover is, it's funny, I once said to a dear friend who knew a lot about my journey, I said, you know, I did a calculation. If instead of trying to help other people, I had just put my money into the stocks I thought would go up, you know, because I love the stock market anyway, I would be worth $39 million today. If I just, you know, did an index fund of my favorite stocks, I'd be worth $39 million. And she looked at me and she said, yeah, but you'd be dead. And I said, you know, you're right. Because I would have, you know, because I had all this wonderful health insurance. I was very wealthy. I just keep going to the doctors, doing what they said, and they would have killed me by now. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I would be dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was great. I had no money. I couldn't afford it. You know, I couldn't go to a doctor. So I had to become my own doctor, and I had to learn about all the different natural methods and blah-de, blah-de, blah. And, you know, and she's right. You know, and I certainly am much happier than I would have been. So all I can tell you is, you know, find your way, come clean and find your way to that, which is real, because it, you know, in a world with this much friction, you don't have time for the unreal. Now, I say that one of the most important. So there's six pillars in building wealth. The first is have a free and inspired life. You have to organize your investment strategies, whether it's, again, time or money, around why you came here and what your purpose is. You know, you didn't come here to put money in the stock market. You came here to serve a purpose, and you've got to invest in that purpose and align your financial strategy with your, you know, with your true purpose. So that was number one. Number two is navigation tools. And the way I introduce navigation tools is I say, there's an official reality, and then there's reality. Official reality is for the cocktail party. Reality is for your investment management and risk management. Okay. Because if you use reality at the cocktail party when they're not ready for it, you lose your friends, or you lose your spouse's friends, or your colleagues' friends. And then if you use the official reality for risk management, you'll get killed. So we are in an environment, the third pillar is risk management. We are in an environment where you can see one healthcare fraud or one financial fraud wipe out three generations of savings in a family. And that's why I always tell people, you don't need an investment strategy, you need a war strategy, because you are in a war and somebody's trying to kill you. And risk management in a war becomes much, much more important than it is in peacetime, especially when one of the greatest weapons your enemy is using is secrecy. You know, so
yes, and lots
part of
it.
That is, right, is getting good maps that help you jump the curve on the secrecy, you know, but then the second thing is good risk management. So you don't, you know, I just got off doing an interview with Sucharit Bhakti and Dr. Meryl Nass about their targeting. So if you look, Sucharit has spent over a year and a team of wonderful attorneys and all sorts of other people helping, you know, thousands and thousands of hours preparing for this hearing. Now, thank God they all did a great job and he was declared not guilty. But, you know, that was what I define as a contrived entrapment, and it wasted.
Yeah.
I just can't tell you the waste of someone of his stature and ability and quality having to spend that time on what is basically a fraud, a prosecutorial fraud.
Definitely. Catherine, I just quickly have to take a break. I'll be back with you in a moment. My name is Germ. This is TNT Radio.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
Last Friday, the WNBA's Phoenix Mercury opened another season, and they lost on the road to the Sparks at Crypto.com Stadium in L.A. It marked the first regular season game for Phoenix star Brittany Griner since being released from a Russian prison last December. And when it was over, the losing coach expressed her displeasure with the announced attendance of some 10,000, about half of capacity.
It was great, but, like, honestly, come on, L.A. Like, we didn't sell the arena for BG. Like, I expected more, you know, to be honest, right? Like, it was great, it was loud, but how was it not a sellout? How was it not a sellout?
She's ripping Sparks fans for not coming to see the return of Griner. Well, 2 days later, Phoenix lost again, this time at home to Chicago. And guess what? Their own home arena didn't sell out either for Griner. About 14,000 showed up, which is about 80% of capacity. Look, this isn't about Griner. The problem is the WNBA. Nobody really cares. Last season, four of the 12 teams averaged about 4,000 fans per game, according to Statista. The league is a big snore fest. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
When the forgotten poor are in need of healing,
They wait for a ship unlike any other. Mercy Ships, a floating hospital staffed by volunteers, heroes of mercy who donate their time to save lives.
Every human has the right to have a place at the table of the human race.
If you could just see the smiles that you get when lives have been changed, then it would make it all worth it.
To learn more about Heroes of Mercy, go to mercyships.org.
Jeremy Nell on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Catherine, earlier you were talking about the importance of cash. Obviously, the elephant in the room is things like gold and silver. Are they forms of freedom as well?
Yes, I love gold and silver. And so I think I've always believed gold and silver, I'll just talk personally, are important part of any any personal financial strategy. I always say, if you come to Slayer, an article called "What Percentage of My Assets Should I Hold in Precious Metals?" It's public. Just do a search and you'll pick it up. And what I say is you should divide your holdings into two positions. One is your core position, which is central bank insurance. So you're trying to protect yourself from, for example, a major change in the global currency system or a major dislocation where, you know, the existing currencies don't work or don't work well, and you're trying to protect yourself from also hyperinflation. So that's your core position. One of my favorite quotes about my core position is always have enough gold to bribe the border guards. Well, we've all heard these stories. I used to have a family friend who talked about how they were able to escape Germany during World War II. Mm. And they, her dad went into the backyard to find the coins, which they had buried in the backyard, and he couldn't find them at first. And so they were all terrified. And then they found them and heard the clinking of the coins in the tin box and realized that they were going to make it when they heard that noise. So it's very, and there are many stories like that. Then your investment position is what makes sense within your portfolio and your investment strategy. But, precious metals, but here's what I would say about precious metals. I love precious metals, but they are not a magic bullet. If you go through history, the most successful currencies are not commodity-based currencies. They're fiat currencies. They're just well-governed. Now, good governance, our problem on planet Earth is our governance. We have a secret governance system, and it's decided to treat some of it. It's our problem is a secret governance system. It's not the currency per se. But a fiat currency can be very successful, not necessarily a debt-based one. Debt-based is, the big problem is poor governance, number one, and debt-based, number two. But if we all put our money in precious metals and put that in the vault and sit and stare at it, we'll never create any wealth. It's not it's great enterprises. So for example, Jeremy Nell learns how to make great cartoons. They add a lot of value. People love them. They laugh. That's creating value. So you invest in your skills and education. You create a business, and that business does something. It goes out and it makes a difference. It helps people understand what's going on without listening to a 5-hour interview. They get to laugh. Humor is the best thing to cut through the fear. Anyway, but that's an example. If we had put our money in gold and silver instead of investing it in you getting an education, and being healthy so that you could become a great cartoonist. Mm. It's 2 + 2 = 8 is what great enterprise does and what education and skills do, and applying new technology in a successful, humane way. So my favorite, my favorite investments are investing in people or investing in enterprise, because just putting money in gold and silver and having it sit in a vault, that's not as exciting to me as starting a company that really does something. Sometimes I talk about my favorite companies. So I'm working up to doing a Solari report on great governance. And my number one company that I'm going to use as an example when I do that makes bicycle gears. I'm not going to say who they are because, they're not necessarily a good investment unless you get in at the right price. But, they have a huge market share of the bicycle components worldwide. And if you look at what they've been doing for decades, they've just been making a better and better and better and better bicycle gear. And it's a beautiful, no, this company is a work of art. It's a beautiful, beautiful company. And you can't have that kind of market share unless you're just so excellent at what you're doing. Now, you know, when you say, oh, a bicycle gear company, that doesn't sound as exciting as a bar of gold, you know. But it's when you look at how many jobs it creates, if you look at how much value, I'm a bicycler, I love bicycles. If you look at how much value it creates, you know, to me, that's how we build real wealth, is by creating enterprises, building enterprises, and putting ourselves to work in a way that makes the pie bigger for all of us.
And also, it gives you a sense of meaning and purpose, doesn't it?
Well, it's funny. One of the things I learned, I had many lessons that I learned as an investment advisor, and I'd love to tell you some more of them. But one of the things I discovered was, if people were exceptionally wealthy, let's say they built a business, they sold a business, now they had a huge amount of financial assets sitting in brokerage accounts or with money managers, they were scared to death. And the reason they were scared to death was they were totally dependent on a system that they didn't trust. And they weren't in the world every day creating value for other people. So if you know somebody who has a practice where they're invaluable for lots of other people, I can't tell you how much confidence it gives them to be useful and to be in the flow of being useful every day. And it's other people needing them and what they do that gives them confidence during periods like the last 3 years. Because you know, I remember my grandfather was a doctor in Jackson, Tennessee, and during the Depression, no one had any money, but they would bring them chickens and they would bring them eggs and they would bring them, you know, they wanted his help and they would trade what they had. And so, you know, our family, my grandfather's family and my father's family, they kept eating during the Depression because they were needed and they were useful. So, you know, I was trained always from the earliest age, you have to be useful. You have to be useful. And if you are useful and you're in cahoots with other people helping them, you know, it's a source of great confidence.
We've got about, I'm just looking at the time now, 5 minutes. So we have to obviously come in for a bit of a landing. But I love chatting to you, Catherine. But if we were to close this conversation with some nuggets of wisdom, what would you say?
So I told you what the building wealth system was. Okay, so I told you the first three pillars. The second three pillars, because there's six in total, is living equity and financial equity. One of the things I discovered as an investment advisor is some people are good at living equity, some people are good at financial equity. Success depends on integrating them. You know, so I would see a wife who was great at living equity, a husband that was great at financial equity. They were talking, you know, past each other, like the French and the Germans. And it was by helping them integrate that they could become really successful, because it's one world. Do you know what I mean? And our time and money is one thing, and we have to integrate those. So I would have people say, I can't afford to help my daughter because I only have $10 million and my financial planner says I'm not safe unless I have 25 million. I'd say, are you crazy? Who do you think's going to be there for you? Help your kids, you know? So anyway, so you have to integrate living in financial equity. The final pillar is my favorite. It's called Turtle Fourth. And Turtle Fourth is about never, ever, ever quitting, no matter what, even if it's hopeless. The quote I use is from magician John Cage, begin anywhere. It's like, oh, I have to become my own doctor. I can't do that. It's overwhelming. Just start, you know, start learning.
I love that. You know, yeah.
Yeah. Just start. Just begin. Go.
Begin.
You know, just hurdle. And it was really funny because I have a wonderful colleague who's one of my favorite colleagues who tried to persuade me to make Turtle Fourth part of one of the other six pillars, because he said, you know, it's so short and he just didn't get it. And I said, you know, your problem is you've never had to spend, you know, fighting directly with real evil. And you have no idea how debilitating real evil can be. And you have to have that turtle mentality. You can't be a liar and a tiger, you know, up against Goliath. You've got to, you know, and when you're dealing with pure evil, demonic evil, you got to be a turtle. One of my favorite videos on the internet is a sea turtle beating a shark. And the shark keeps trying to eat the turtle, and he keeps flipping his shell, and the shark just can't get him. And then he floats around backwards and bites the shark in the tail, and the shark takes off because he's in so much pain. It's great. So this tiny little sea turtle beats the shark, but he never quits. He just never quits, and he never gives up hope. So number six pillar is turtle fourth. And to me, that's the most important, because all the other pillars you'll figure out if you just keep turtling. And that's why, you know, even though it looks complicated and even though it can be overwhelming, and never, ever, ever quit, just keep turtling.
Catherine, I love that. It's so uplifting. Okay, just quickly, maybe tell me how I can follow you.
Oh, it's real simple. We have a website, Solera. You can sign up for our updates. We send our updates out weekly. We have a lot of related sites. As you know, we cover, you know, we try in many, we've tried to really help people understand the financial coup, both the, you know, the missing money, the going direct reset, CBDCs, all the different parts of this. And we tried to bring it down into digestible holes. And so just go to Solera. There's a wealth there. Sign up for the update. And we publish, some of our material is public, some is subscriber only, but, you know, check it out. And what we try and do is make our core information available for free. And then if you want more, you subscribe. And we have a fabulous cartoon.
That you do.
That we publish weekly. And I have a feeling we're going to get more cartoons with turtles in it, right?
I think you might have inspired something there, Catherine. I think you just might have won me over. Just quickly, before we go, I just want to tell you that I have spoken to my wife. We are definitely thinking about taking up your invitation to come and visit you at some point in the near future.
Yeah, so I go back and forth between the US and the Netherlands, and I'm trying to talk Jeremy to come visit. We have continuous energy. We have continuous electricity. You can work 24/7 when you come and visit us, okay?
What is it like having 24 hours of electricity? It must be lovely.
it's quite lovely. It's absolutely, you know, that's the beauty of the Dutch. The Dutch, you know, they make everything work. They're amazing.
Just quickly before we go, there's a comment in the live chat from somebody, would you believe it, called Catherine. And she says, Catherine is truly wise, generous in sharing her knowledge, and a trustworthy source. I love her.
Well, thank you. Thank you. We, you know, I really believe that, I really believe that we can transform the situation, and I'm just going to keep turtling.
Keep turtling. Catherine Orson-Fitz, thank you for joining me in the trenches.
Thank you, Jeremy. Have a wonderful day.
I will, and I hope you do too. God bless you. You're such an inspiration, Catherine. And and thank you, Alex, for running the show, keeping us sounding somewhat professional. Alex, send me an email, jimwarfare@tntradio.live. Let me know what you thought of this conversation with Catherine. I loved it. I'll catch you tomorrow. My name is Jim. This is Jim Warfare, the Battle of Ideas.